Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. This hour, we're going to be talking about how parents can play a crucial role in supporting their children's academic achievement. And it's going to be one of the things that will be discussed at the National Quality Education Conference taking place in Milwaukee on Sunday, November 16, and next Monday, the 17th of November. Tracy Hill is going to be the keynote speaker at that conference, and she joins us for a good chunk of this hour, Executive Director of Family and Community Engagement for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. She was recognized as one of 16 leaders by Education Week magazine this year, and she participated in the White House Symposium on Transformative Family Engagement. Later this hour, Brenda Martinez will join us, a teacher at the ALBA, ALBA School, here in Milwaukee, and she works to develop programs that build the capacity of parents and caregivers to support their children's academic achievement. That school is doing very, very well, and when we look at the racial achievement gap, the school is doing a very good job of closing the gap. It's an interesting school. It's run by teachers. So we're going to be welcoming phone calls during the course of this hour. How do we get parents, and how should they be involved? When do you let go? When do you help with homework? What about attending parent-teacher conferences? What about for young people who have not had many members of their family go on to college? How do you navigate college if that's what the young person wants to do? How do you help do that? Whereas other families who have more money and a history of people going to college may find that an easier task. Here's how you reach us this hour, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Hi, Tracy. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You know, yeah. I was interested in looking at all these studies that show that, is it really true that even more than a teacher, a parent's involvement in a child's education can determine whether or not that child will be successful?
Well, of course. I mean, there are lots of studies out there right now. Dr. Karen Mapp out of the Harvard School of Education has done over 20 years worth of research. Her and Ann Henderson, who co-authored a book called Beyond the Bake Sale. And they have found there's a lot of empirical evidence as well as anecdotal evidence that shows that, you know, family engagement is a critical component of a student succeeding in school. You know, what we do know about students and parents being engaged is that the Flamboyant Foundation actually found that family engagement contributes to increased student achievement, higher graduation rates, reduce absenteeism and dropout rates, better attitudes about school by students, better social skills and fewer disciplinary incidents, better student-teacher relationships, and improve cultural competence and trust in the school. So, you know, when we look at how our family engagement, you know, there, like I said, there's a lot of evidence that shows that it matters. It really, really matters for our students, especially nowadays in the society where there are so many distractors
right.
for education. It's just important for parents to be involved in whatever capacity they can be.
What about parents who may, and there are many parents like this. I know a lot of people who's are the first of their generation. Their generation is first in their whole family history to go to college. Mm-hmm. I've heard from a lot of parents or teachers, particularly, that there are a good number of parents who don't feel very comfortable in a school setting because perhaps they didn't do very well at school or they didn't go to college. They feel mm-hmm. intimidated by school, thus low rates of parent-teacher conferences, low rates of involvement. What is it schools can do to make sure that all parents are welcome? Come on through the door. We don't care how much education you have.
Well, I think that that's one of the struggles that we as educators have, is that oftentimes when you look at, especially in urban centers and also in rural communities and some of our suburban communities, that there's this there are generations of families that have lived in that community. I mean, like I know in Cleveland, you know, many of the families that go to our schools, the parents went to the schools, the grandparents went to the schools, and in some instances, the great-grandparents. So when you have sometimes a history or a legacy of failure or mistrust, it's hard to break that down. That's why I stress to educators the importance of relationships and building those relationships and building that trust. Because we often say, okay, we want the parents to come and we want them to be engaged and we want them to, you know, feel comfortable. But when a person has a history or a legacy of not being comfortable, where there's been a lack of trust, where their experience might not have been a good one, they might not have even have finished school, mm-hmm. you know, saying that to someone and then expecting them to show up. When you haven't built a relationship, or when there is this relationship of mistrust, parent, they're not going to come. I always say, you know, it's like if a stranger invited me to their house for dinner, even if they lived in the same neighborhood, and I didn't know them, or I didn't have another person that knew them and knew what to expect, then the likelihood that I would show up to that person's house for dinner is very small. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have a relationship with that person. So I always talk about the importance of taking time to set the stage for a parent engagement. And part of setting the stage for parent engagement is building relationships with parents and with families. There's a Flamboyant has also worked with several school districts, and I can't recall the name of the young lady. I'd love to give her credit, and I'll have to look it up, who developed a framework called the Academic Parent-Teacher Team Meeting, which replaces the traditional parent-teacher conference, basically bringing in the whole classroom of parents, showing them, you know, the classroom goals, helping them to set goals for themselves, and then demonstrating some activities that they can do at home. So moving away from that traditional parent-teacher conference. But the foundation of that particular model is that the teachers actually before school during the summer go and they do home visits with parents.
Oh.
And the first question that they ask the parents is, what are your hopes and dreams for your child? And just imagine the impact of that, of a person who maybe isn't the same race as you or the same socioeconomic status coming into your neighborhood where, you know, they might not feel the most comfortable, and then coming into your home and asking you, not bringing in any pencil or paper or anything to take notes, that, you know, I'm here to get to know you. I want to know about your child. I want to know what their strengths are, what are their talents, and what are your hopes and dreams? And imagine the door that it opens for a parent, again, a parent who might not have had a good experience
right.
in school.
Unfortunately, it's a whole lot extra for a teacher, though, and teachers already have so much to do.
I know, but I call it, it's like a return on your investment, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you really think about it, you know, I save, I invest money into another account besides my retirement account, and it hurts. I miss that money. There are other things that I could be doing with it,
mm-hmm.
but when you think about the investment, you think about saving, you think about being able to retire and not having to worry. You know, oftentimes I say to teachers, and I'm a former teacher myself. I taught children with emotional disturbances and autism and cognitive disabilities in a day treatment facility. These are out of schools where they're specialized schools for kids who don't make it in public school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I found most beneficial, and believe me, I had kids in my classroom. I had 7 different reading levels. You know, I had kids
oh,
with
my.
Severe challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important things for me to do, especially with these children and their parents who, you know, didn't make it in traditional school, was, again, to set that stage for working with that parent and building that relationship and that trust, because I needed those parents to help me turn around the behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it by myself. So I often say to educators, even in my own school district, you know, investing that time, you know, even if you don't want to go on a home visit, but making a phone call at the beginning of the year, you know, as you're getting your class together, you know, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 calls a day, and saying to a parent, "Hi, I'm Denise's teacher. I'm really looking forward to having your child in my class. You know, tell me a little bit about her, and what are your hopes and dreams for your child?" So investing maybe a 5 or 10 minutes or 15 minutes in a conversation with a parent, I think that that's a great investment. And you know, and what we see is that for for children and for parents who've had that kind of a positive start with their teachers, it builds, it creates this culture of trust. And it actually decreases the likelihood that there are going to be problems with that child later on, because the child knows that, hey, my mom has this teacher's back. They have this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's, you know, it's a great investment of time and energy. And the sooner you do it, the better the results. And then to have that ongoing dialogue with parents, you know, periodically making those positive phone calls home. Because what we also see a lot of times in urban centers like Cleveland is parents don't expect to hear anything good about their kids, you know?
Right.
Our city is predominantly minority, predominantly African-American. We have 100% of our children in our schools receive free and reduced lunch. And, you know, a lot of times when I talk to parents and they get a positive phone call home, it's like they're shocked. It's like nobody's ever said anything good about my kid. So it changes the dynamic. It changes it. There's a shift in terms of that parent's thinking of, okay, this person really does care. And when you have parents who feel like that you really care as a teacher, they're going to have your back and they're going to support you.
And what do you hear when you ask teachers the answers, and I'm sure you did this with your students as well, when you ask parents, what are the hopes and dreams for your child? What are the answers?
Oftentimes the answers are that they'll finish high school. Unfortunately, in Cleveland, we do have a high a rate of violence, that they actually live to graduate from high school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's indicative of, like I said, the society we live in. We just had an incident in Washington State where a student went into a cafeteria and opened fire. So, you know, our parents are, you know, yeah, they have hopes and dreams. Yeah, I want my kid to go to college. I want them to graduate. I want them to be a doctor. I want them to be a lawyer, an engineer. But the reality for many of our parents is that they want their children to just live to see the end of high school and also to then go on to post-secondary opportunities in college. And that's not all of our parents across the board. But I have had some parents say to me, I want them to live to see their 18th birthday.
Oh, that breaks your heart, doesn't it?
And that's a sad reality.
Oh, I know. It's a real sad reality. And you deal, you know, with students who are homeless, who are moving from low income, who are also moving all the time.
In our district, about 11% of our students are homeless. So we actually have a department called Project ACT that is funded through federal funds. And we do a lot of family engagement with our homeless families as well, you know, helping them with clothing and sometimes working with some of our shelters. We do family literacy events at the Cleveland Playhouse and send taxis out to their house, to their where they're residing in the homeless shelters and then and some of the other hotels that they set up here and bring them to the Cleveland Playhouse, which is actually quite spectacular to do these literacy events. But, you know, there are a number of different ways that you can work with families to help break that cycle of under-education and poverty. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, for educators is to, you know, this is hard work. You know, educating youth, educating our children, especially in this time, is difficult work. But the next great civil rights issue, I think, for me is educating our children so that they're prepared for the jobs and careers that are out there right now.
Yes.
And making sure that they are able to read, that they're succeeding. And that takes a very compassionate and dedicated individual.
Mm-hmm.
And those individuals are our educators. Those are our teachers. Because, like I said, it's difficult work, especially with all the new expectations, with the Common Core and PARC assessments and, you know, student learning objectives. It's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
But it's a worthwhile cause.
Tell me, Tracy, about this. I believe you started this. Parent University?
Well, I didn't start it. I can't take credit for it. There are a number of districts that have been using or doing the Parent University program. You know, Miami-Dade, Baltimore, they call theirs the Family Academy, Sacramento, Boston actually uses the term Parent University as well as Philadelphia. And when I first started this job, this is the beginning of my fifth year, I came from a small nonprofit. I worked at a nonprofit family support center. And I developed several literacy curriculums for young parents and children that involved interactive play and embedding learning activities into play. And so when I came from that small setting, you know, to a larger setting where, oh my God, we have almost 40,000 kids, you know, about 27,000 households, 103 schools. Let me see what else, what other people are doing in terms of family engagement and how they structure it. So one of the first things I did was get on the road and start traveling. First, to see what other districts were doing. So I went to Baltimore, and then I also went to Miami-Dade and visited, and then Boston was like my last stop. And I had actually gotten invited to Boston by the Institute of Educational Leadership in Washington, D.C. They had started a family engagement network for district administrators and got my name off the website and invited me to Boston. And that's where I met Michelle Brooks and Dr. Karen Mapp of Harvard, and then got introduced to their Parent University program, which basically they do in collaboration with Northeastern University. They invite parents, I think, 3 times a year to come and spend a day on the campus, take workshops on a variety of different topics. So I looked at that and I said, this is very interesting. So when I came back to Cleveland, we hadn't been doing anything like that. And I said, well, let's give it a shot in Cleveland. And we've had wonderful events here, programs. We don't do ours in connection with a university yet, but we do sponsor them in our school buildings, in our high school buildings, and we offer a wide array of workshops. Actually, we have a parent university this Saturday with workshops. We have a chef doing healthy cooking with our parents. Mm-hmm. We're doing a class, you know, yoga basics, because we do have a strong emphasis on health and wellness and how do we help parents, you know, de-stress themselves. I know, you know, stress is something that kills people, and if you don't find healthy ways to take care of yourself,
right.
So we have a yoga class where parents will do basic yoga.
Oh, nice!
To take home so that they can practice at home, and then you know we are utilizing a lot of technology in our district, so. We have several classes that are being offered in the computer lab to introduce parents to the supplementary online tools for the curriculum that we're using in our schools. We also are doing a workshop. We have one of our partners doing a workshop on, it's called Brain Power. And basically it's going to help parents understand the importance of the 0 to 5 years to set the stage for a successful experience in school. Because there's a lot of research out there, and I probably don't have to tell you about the importance of,
right.
of those first 60 months or the 2,000 days in terms of a child's brain development and their readiness for school. So, you know, like I said, I wasn't the first person to do a parent university, and I know that they're cropping up all over the country because, you know, we have to work with our parents to help build their capacity to support their students' learning. You know, I said in several interviews before that, you know, our parents come on a spectrum. They're very diverse, no matter what community you go into. You can go into the richest community in the nation, and you'll find that parents have a diverse set of skills. So what we seek to do with our parents and in collaboration with our parents, they often advise us on what to offer and what not to offer, is to provide them with opportunities to network with one another, but also to sharpen their skills and put more tools in their toolkit for parenting.
Tracy Hill is our guest this hour, and we're going to welcome phone calls for her. We're talking this hour about the importance of parents and other caregivers, the role that they play, should play, can play with the proper encouragement in supporting their children's academic achievement and how crucial their role is. So what should that encompass? Tracy mentioned beyond the bake sale, is there any place for bake sales still? I know that various groups are being asked to raise lots of money to keep certain programs going in schools. What is the best way for schools to engage with parents of the students? I like this idea of a university. That's neat. We also hear these rather dismal statistics. If you're a low-income student and you want to go to a high-performing school, college somewhere in this country, that to navigate that and learn about it and get the support that you need to even apply is a fairly difficult process. So how can we help our parents get those students into the places they want to go. And if they want to go to college, get into college. Maybe your school is doing something that you think is really terrific. We are going to be talking with Brenda Martinez a little bit later. She's at an MPS school, charter school, working with schools and parents. And they've done an incredible job with parent involvement when it comes to their student or parent and teacher conferences. They have almost 100% of the parents show up. They're also doing a great job of closing the racial achievement gap. So we'll talk with Brenda a little bit later on. But certainly welcome your phone calls. Let us know what you're doing. That's what we do here, is find out what people are thinking and what they're doing. And maybe some idea you have will spark somebody else to start a similar kind of program for parents. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Tracy Hill is our guest. Tracy is Executive Director of Family and Community Engagement for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. She has been recognized as an outstanding leader in education by Education Week magazine, participated in a White House symposium on transformative family engagement. So we welcome your phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow on our program at this time, on Veterans Day, we talk with the author of War Dogs, Tales of Canine Heroism, History, and Love. Dogs weren't officially made a part of the U.S. military until 1942, but the history of working on battlefields all over the world stretches way, way, way back. So we will talk about what American military working dogs are doing now. And Rebecca Frankel, the author of the book, will be with us. She's been writing about war dogs for a number of years in her Friday column that's titled Rebecca's War Dog of the Week, part of Foreign Policy's coverage. All right, let's go to a phone call. Blair is our first caller for you, Tracy Hill from Madison. Hi, Blair.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about English lessons, English instruction for parents.
Okay.
It can be such a huge lift for parents who speak languages other than English to get English instruction, preferably at the school, mm-hmm. so that they can be a part of their child's development as they grow up.
And is this do you know where this is happening, Blair?
You know, the thing about it is it's a resource issue. The schools I've taught in, we've wanted,
mm-hmm.
and we can't get the funding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tracy.
Yes. So we actually do have a school here, actually several of our schools that work with our local community college and offer ESL classes for parents whose second language or who don't speak English well. That's one of our – we have just lots of partners in Cleveland that are collaborating with our schools. I don't know if you have them in Milwaukee, but we have what are called community schools here in Cleveland where we have extended day programs and actually after-school programs for kids, and then we also have workshops for parents. So one of our schools is called the International Newcomers Academy, and this is for refugee parents or parents who are coming from other countries, not necessarily refugees, who don't speak English and their children don't speak English. And the kids are evaluated and stay in this program for a year to a year and a half until they get a certain rating on the Otella, which is a language acquisition test. But as part of that, we have a parent mentor there for the parents. And we actually, in three of our schools with high numbers of parents who don't speak English, we offer ESL classes. And we also offer a citizenship class for those parents as well.
Oh.
So you can do it. It's resource intensive. So I would say to check with your local community colleges, or I'm not sure how things are structured there in Wisconsin in terms of who an agency that provides GED classes to parents, if they also provide the ESL classes. But that's we work with a partner to actually provide those classes in our schools.
And we'll ask this of Brenda when she joins us in a few minutes, because I know that at her school, two out of three students are learning English. Almost everybody in the school is Hispanic, so we'll see what the language situation is for the parents there. Blair, thank you very much. If you'd like to join us on air by phone, the number is 800-486-8655. Tracy Julie on Facebook says, my son has a learning disability. I can tell you that in my experience, even dedicated teachers can't do everything, and the parents have to be the number one advocate for their child. We kept trying different solutions and working with the district to find the right way to teach our son so he could thrive. The experience really made me aware of how easily a child can get lost without that parent advocacy.
Oh, definitely. You know, one of the things, we have like four different strands of classes as part of our parent university. We have parents as learners because everyone is always learning. I always say I don't know everything in the universe, so I learn something new every day. We also have a strand of classes that's called parents as advocates. So we do offer parents workshops on the IEP process, multifactored evaluations. What does it mean? You know, is your child in the right placement? Are the services the correct services for a child? But I, you know, she talks about being an advocate. Yeah, that's the capacity building part of the work that we're doing. The United States Department of Education actually just recently released what they call the dual capacity framework for family school partnerships. And we talk about how, and the framework talks about how we need to build the capacity of our parents. So that they're better supporters and encouragers and monitors and models of lifelong learning, advocates and decision makers and collaborators with school staff. But concurrently, as you're looking at building the capacity of your families, you also have to be building the capacity of our educators to be receptive to, you know, parents being partners in their schools. You know, what we saw and what I saw in Cleveland when I first took this position was that a lot of our schools kept the parents out. You know, it's like we don't want them here. They're more of a problem. They're the reason why their kids are failing. And when you have that kind of philosophy about parents, of course parents aren't going to come.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working on shifting the culture in our district, and it's a heavy lift, especially when you have teachers who've been in the district for 20, 30 years, and they've seen, you know, the increased rates of poverty and the lack of the miseducation and, you know, the jobs that left. And, you know, Cleveland isn't what it used to be 40 years ago. And but we can't continue to blame parents for their lack of participation because oftentimes, like we discussed earlier, they didn't have a good experience or they didn't have a good model. I talk about my life. You know, I was raised, my father was a Green Beret in Vietnam. Suffered from PTSD and alcoholism and drug abuse, and there was a lot of domestic violence in my home. And when I went to school, it was one place that I felt safe. My mom, I'm the first person in my family to graduate, but despite all those troubles, despite all that, you know, what was going on in my home, you know, she encouraged me. You know, she wasn't able to be at the school every day. I'm one of six kids, you know. And then when my father, you know, finally when my mom left my father, she worked two jobs. So she wasn't there for the bake sales or the PTA meetings or, you know, people would say that she was not involved. But her role, you know, when we talk about defining family engagement, it's not the moms, you know, it is the moms and the dads who are up at the school every day and volunteering. But family engagement takes on different forms. It's what families do at home to support their children, creating a space for them to study, you know, asking if they've done their homework, reading to them.
Right.
Even if a parent can't read, making sure that they're getting their homework done. It's what they do in the community, exposing their kids to all the wonderful cultural arts institutions. And even, you know, I tell a lot of my families who don't have subscriptions to our local museums, you know, we have dozens of free festivals in the summer on the lakefront, you know, at the zoo to get your kids out to those
sure.
opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, and then at the school as well by being an advocate. I have a son who has a seizure disorder and he's on a 504 plan. So of course I'm there advocating for him. You know, and they didn't want to make the accommodations, you know, and I'm an educator, so I know. It's like, no, this is what needs to happen. This is going to help him be successful. So, you know, family engagement takes on many, it looks different for every parent because not every parent, as I said, can be there at the school every day because of the circumstances that they themselves have in their lives.
Yeah. We want to introduce Brenda Martinez to our conversation as well. It's a school in Milwaukee. It's an interesting program. It's teacher-led. There's no principal at the school. It's a charter school, part of Milwaukee Public Schools, and it's the Alba School, bilingual K through 5 elementary school on the south side of Milwaukee, and it's really doing some remarkable work. The school was selected by People magazine as a school with among the nation's best teachers. They have parent response to parent-teacher conferences that's almost 100%, which is incredible. And they have been ranked as exceeding expectations on its 2012-2013 report card. They are a school that is doing a very good job of closing the racial achievement gap. So, Tracy, stay with us. But, Brenda, thank you very much for joining our conversation. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What an interesting model for a school. You're essentially run by teachers.
Right. It's kind of set up like a legal law firm partnership model where all the teachers are partners within the school.
Uh-huh.
And so the collective voice of the teachers is what guides the school, and our parents are kind of the checks and balances of the school through the governing council.
Now tell me, we've been talking about parental involvement, and we'll look at all aspects of that, but in terms of having parent-teacher conferences, I have heard from so many teachers that they just have a hard time getting parents to attend those, and you have almost 100% involvement. That's incredible.
It is quite remarkable, and it's happened for so long that it just kind of feels normal now. And teachers really go out of their way to make sure that they have a connection with the house and to make sure that parents can attend conferences, whether it's at the scheduled conference time or if they have to come in earlier before school or during a lunch hour, whatever time it is that the parent can best come to school to be able to have a conversation about their child's progress. We do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm. And what is the outreach? We were talking with Tracy about how if they have time, it's great if teachers can go to the homes of their students and say, what are the dreams and hopes for your child? How do you engage with parents in the community?
Sure. We do several things at the beginning of the year. Our open house is actually a before school, back to school kind of a night where families come into the building. They get to see their classroom, meet their teachers, drop off school supplies. We go through a whole orientation of school policies and expectations, present all the staff to the parents. And so that's kind of the kickoff. And then from there, we also do home visits during about the third or fourth week of school. That way we can just touch base with parents if we haven't seen them yet. It also gives us a chance to talk about at-home reading strategies for their child, show different ways that they can read to a student, but then also ask questions to follow up that reading with their child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice package where we're constantly seeing parents, we're constantly talking to them, and it's really an open door, two-way communication is what's pivotal in our school.
And you have a number of students who are not proficient in English, don't you?
Right. Most of our school are native Spanish speakers, whether they're first or second generation immigrants. And so honoring the parents' culture and their language here in the building really helps to open the door and to make parents feel welcome to participate in the education process here in the school.
And what about programs for the school? We were talking about that some in the first part of the show, to allow the parents to be able to learn English. Does that happen too or not?
Sure. For quite some time here in our building, we had parent ESL classes and different parent education classes in school. And really, it's a matter of hearing and listening to the parents' opinions about what kind of trainings or workshops they want offered. And so we offer things from love and logic parenting classes for parents to nutrition and healthy family program with one of the local medical clinics. We also have parent leadership classes so that they can become more of an advocate in the community for things in their communities. And so it's really just responding to the needs that the parents bring to the table that they would like to, you know, receive training on or even develop their own skills a little bit further.
Tracy, this sounds like a pretty good, I mean, it's amazing what this school has been able to do, isn't it? Tracy, are you there? Oh, maybe Tracy's gone. Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
It sounds phenomenal, and it's like when I'm listening, and it's, again, building those relationships with parents,
right.
And, you know, having that open door policy for parents and, you know, understanding the cultural nuances and getting that family feedback, you know. We have a district-wide parent advisory committee that has around 40 parents from different ethnicities, special education, ESL, and high school, preschool, elementary school parents, and they meet with our district leadership, and basically we run by our different initiatives and things with them and ask them, well, what do you think? Give us your feedback, good or bad. So it's important that parents do have that voice. And then also at the schools, you know, asking parents, doing surveys, finding out what it is that they need. I love Love and Logic. It's phenomenal. So, you know, finding out what the parents need and want to help them, you know, again, building that capacity so that they can support their students' learning. But the biggest thing that I heard was that there's an open door policy there. And,
right.
And sometimes when we look at our schools, even in my district, I mean, we're not perfect. We have a long way to go. Some of our schools aren't open door. They actually have signs that say, no parents allowed until 2:30.
Really?
Yeah, and actually I've gone to those schools and ripped the signs down. because we're the servants of our families. I'm a servant of the families and students in this district. You know, that they pay taxes to support public education. And personally, I don't feel that there should be any sign on any school anywhere that says parents aren't allowed until a certain time. I think, you know, that does not give a parent a sense that this is a welcoming environment.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, we have lots of schools in our district that are open door policy, where parents are welcomed as volunteers. They come in, you know, that they have parent resource rooms. The parents actually conduct workshops for each other, you know, leadership workshops. So, like I said, there's a wide array here in Cleveland, and we're working every day to make all of our schools more welcoming, because, again, like I said, the research shows when families are engaged to whatever degree they can as a supporter, encourager, advocates, then our students are going to do better, because they know
right.
that parent values education and, again, has hopes and dreams and wants the best for their students.
Yeah. Brenda, do you have, if a parent wants to volunteer at your school, even if they can't do it very often, do you have places for parents to volunteer? And if so, what would they be doing?
Sure. We have a parent coordinator that organizes all of the volunteer efforts, whether they're parents or community members. And some of the different offerings we have for volunteering, they can volunteer in a classroom, in a reading or in a math center. They can volunteer in the office, making copies, passing out papers. We have a lot of parents that love to make bulletin boards and displays for us.
Oh.
And so they're very artistic. And so we're fortunate that they're willing to take an idea and run with it and put up displays so that teachers can focus more on instruction than on displaying student work all of the time. We also have classes after school where parents can volunteer with the different sports teams that we have, or even on committees and school councils as well.
Ooh, that's pretty heavy involvement. Does that sound like higher than normal when you hear about that, Tracy?
No, not at all.
No.
mean, like I said, we have a wide array of a spectrum of different of buildings. We have, you know, a lot of our buildings do engage. We have a volunteer actually on my staff as a manager of volunteers, and she works with the schools to coordinate volunteerism in the schools, because we know teachers are really busy. They need to be focused on instruction with those kids.
Mm-hmm.
So any way that we can help them, you know, take a little bit of the load off in terms of, you know, cutting out manipulatives for math centers, you know, putting up bulletin boards, making copies, getting those Friday folders ready, you know, volunteering in the classroom, you know, maybe sitting and reading a story to a student as they're doing differentiated instruction, you know. So, you know, volunteers are welcome, and many of our schools do have volunteer programs. We also have groups of volunteers who come in from churches and different organizations, and then just making sure that all those volunteer efforts are aligned with the school goals and support student achievement.
Let's welcome more phone calls. We're talking about parental involvement in schools, and particularly with low-income students, maybe students who don't have the advantages of a history of family going on to college and really being very, very involved in schools. We have two guests with us, and we do want to tell you that there's a conference coming up in Milwaukee on Sunday and Monday, the National Quality Education Conference. Tracy Hill will be the keynote speaker at that conference, Executive Director of Family and Community Engagement for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. Brenda Martinez is also with us, a teacher and also a principal, because the teachers are the principals at the Alba School on Milwaukee's South Side. It is a bilingual K through 5 elementary school in Milwaukee where the parental involvement is really terrific. Here's how you reach our conversation. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, will like us and we'll send you updates. And Twitter is at K Dunn Show. I know many of you listening are involved in education in some way. Maybe your school is doing something that's really welcoming of parents and is tapping into parents' skills to help the school run. How do we reach parents who, for a whole host of reasons, are not very engaged in their child's education when it's such an important thing to do? More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls for our guests. 800-486-8655 is the number. Claudia is our next caller. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
My comment is, I had my son, very, very active, maybe possibly ADHD, but he was tested, did not come up. He did really well up until fourth grade when he had man teachers. And he was told that he was the bottom of the barrel. We did everything at home to get him through school. I mean, all kinds of books and CDs and videos. He graduated high school with a 1.63 grade point average, just pushing him out. Hmm. He immediately went into the Marine Corps and graduated Marine Corps boot camp with a 3.75 grade point average. Hmm. Huge discrepancy.
So where is this going?
Well, we have teachers that are pushing them through. If it wasn't for charter school with the education tailored to his needs, he may never have graduated and gone on to be the Marine that he is. And he has had 4 tours of duty.
Mm-hmm.
In combat. So someone needs to address teachers with tenure or teachers that don't pay attention to that lower one-third that really may be smart but aren't given the chance.
And what did you feel you had to do, Claudia? Did you meet with the school? Did you meet with the teachers?
Oh, all the time.
Uh-huh.
Weekly letters, daily progress report, everything that we could do here. His dad and I sat down at the table, and everything that we could do. He came home from fifth grade. He threw himself on the floor. He said, I will never make it to college.
Mm.
He was in despair over the way that he was being treated by teachers.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, address this, please.
Well, I think that, you know, as I talked about the dual capacity building framework, that professional development for teachers needs to be ongoing. You know, I was just at a conference in California where one of the presenters talked about a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. You know, oftentimes our students with disabilities are looked at as not capable. They're extra work. They don't want to have to make those accommodations and modifications. And it's very unfortunate. That's the nature of the beast. So I also always stress the importance of professional development. And it sounds like you advocated for your son as much as you possibly could. And I thank you for his service, being the daughter of an Army veteran. I really thank you for his service in our military. So it's very unfortunate that those things were said to him. One of the focuses in Cleveland right now is on what we call humanware or social-emotional learning, and basically providing professional development for our teachers around the importance of a child's social-emotional well-being, because we know that academics and social-emotional learning go hand in hand. A child who doesn't feel good about himself, who has low self-esteem, is not going to learn, and especially if he has adults who I would say are supposed to be the trusting adults in his life saying those kinds of things to him. So I'm appalled.
Brent,
as an educator, I just continue to stress that we can't just look at the academics. We also have to look at the social emotional well-being of our students and think of how ways that we can build them up and not tear them down.
Right. Brenda, you want to comment?
Sure. I was just going to say, I think one of the things that's very important, especially in this age of testing, is to really provide unique and enriching opportunities for students. So where a student might not be gifted academically, they might be gifted artistically or in mechanical objects or just doing different things. And so I think the onus is really on providing just a big smorgasbord of opportunities for students, and then finding out where their individual talent and interest lies and taking that and capitalizing on that to use it in the areas that are a little bit weaker. So maybe a student's not as strong as a reader as we would like for him or her to be, but yet they have an incredible knowledge base around horses. And so combining those two areas, we can often get kids to move along, to progress, and achieve. They might not be, you know, rocket scientists at the end of the day, and that is okay, but they're going to have skills to make it through life and be successful at whatever career path they choose in the future.
Thanks, Claudia, very much for your call. John in Green Bay, hi.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi. I work in primarily Title I schools in the Green Bay District, and we're always, you know, we always want to have parental involvement, parental engagement, volunteers, and things like that, but the challenges that we run into is there are a lot of families and parents and things like that who can't pass a background check, and our district is really strict about their background checks. And not that I'm advocating that they don't be, but they really come up as uninviting and not a very welcoming place for our families because of those things. They aren't willing to budge.
I must ask, why are they not passing background checks?
Our students and families, a lot of times, you know, they have, especially in our Title I schools, in our lower income families and things like that, you know, they've got things that have happened in their past.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be where they're at now, but things have happened in their past that will come up as a flag on a background check, and the school is not going to let them in, no matter what. And that's even if they're students their parents or guardians of children in the school. You know, the schools are so strict about it.
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that. Tracy.
Wow. Well, we do. We also have a policy in our district where anyone with a list of felony convictions, and we do a screening for all of our volunteers. Basically, what we do, and I think we're a little bit more lenient than Green Bay, is if we find that a parent has an offense that falls within a certain category, we give the autonomy to the school principal to say, if you know this parent and you trust this parent, this happened 20 years ago, they're in a different place now. So we allow the schools to actually have autonomy over whether or not, I mean, not if it's like a sexual offender or, you know, someone with domestic violence or one of those types of offenses, but if it was someone, you know, for check fraud 20 years ago, I mean, we're not going to say, no, you can't come to school because you wrote a bad check 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we do screen of all of our volunteers, and then if we find that a person has that red flag, depending on the offense, we allow the principal to make the call because they know that person better than me. I'm sitting downtown. You know that person. You know that parent.
Mm-hmm.
We have been kind of creative about some of the, you know, when we have found those kinds of instances where if the parent does want to volunteer, you know, we work with the teachers and say, well, how else can this parent help? So some of our teachers, our kindergarten and our primary teachers, will like send home laminated manipulatives. And then the parent cuts them out and returns them. So we think of other ways that perhaps if the parent can't come into school because of an offense like that, that we can find things that they can do outside of the school to support the school.
Right. Let's get one more comment. It has to be brief, Laura. I'm sorry, we're almost out of time.
I am a retired school counselor, and school counselors all over Wisconsin conduct individual planning conferences with students and their parents. The counselor facilitates the conversation to help the parents say what are their hopes and the dreams, and for the child to say, these are my strengths, and this is what I'd like to do with my life.
All right. Great. Thanks, Laura, so much for your call. And we are out of time. Tracy Hill, thank you very much for being with us. Have a good time in Milwaukee.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Brenda Martinez, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Tracy Hill is Executive Director of Family and Community Engagement for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. Brenda Martinez is a teacher at the Alba School on Milwaukee's South Side. It's a K-5 bilingual elementary school in Milwaukee where they have phenomenal parental involvement. And just about everyone is low-income and Hispanic, and they are doing a very good job of closing the racial achievement gap. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow during this time period on Veterans Day, we are going to be speaking with the author of War Dogs, Tales of Canine Heroism, History, and Love. Great conversations ahead, so stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.